Thank you for giving me the possibility to talk about my work with my collaborators on this subject. And I'm happy to be here again for 1 month. So I hope I will have time to discuss with many of you of different subjects. Okay, I will talk about a subject that probably you know rather well because it was developed in part by a group here, by Pedro, Shota, and their collaborators. So I will try to be brief on the introductory part, supposing that most of you know the basics. So, well, the long purpose, long-term purpose of studying N equals 4 superring meals is to understand how to describe gauge theories of head-strong coupling through the gauge-string correspondence. And this particular theory is interesting because this gauge string correspondence can be understood via integrability. The theory is it seems to be integrable, so we can learn many things about it by using the methods of integrability, which works as you know in 1+1 dimensions. So it's a way to see strings in ADS5 cross S5 as an integrable 1+1 dimensional field theory on some surface of some genus. So the mapping between N equals 4 gauge theory and integrable field theory, in fact, at weak coupling, the integrable field theory is a nearest neighbor interacting spin chain. So we are lucky that we can apply methods from integrable spin chains. So the mapping is between planar N equals 4 super M meals with gauge group SUN. So I will use as a coupling constant G square, which is lambda over 16 pi square, which is essentially G Young-Mills square times the number of colors. So this will be finite. So that's the coupling constant. Hoft coupling constant for the planar N equals 4 super Young-Mills theory. And the symmetry has a global symmetry, the theory has a global symmetry PSU 2,2/4 group where this is in fact the conformal group in four dimensions. The theory is conformal invariant, and this is SO6 R symmetry. So, as you certainly know, this theory is dual to strings in ADS5 cross S5, and these two bosonic symmetries are also the isometric groups of the string background. So the mapping to a spin chain is given via the gauge invariant local operators, which are traces over the SUN group of the fundamental fields of the theory, which can be scalars, can be fermions, or covariant derivatives of fermions or scalars at some point in the space-time four-dimensional space-time. And these traces can be interpreted as put into one-to-one correspondence with some spin chains where the states of the individual spins are in fact described by this states of the which belong to some representation of the super symmetry group PSU22/4. So there is a mapping between these two objects, and the dilatation operator for the theory acts as a Hamiltonian for this spin chain, and it acts like as an integrable Hamiltonian. At lowest non-trivial order, the Hamiltonian is nearest neighbor, but at higher loop order, long-range interaction, which couple spins at arbitrary distance, start to develop. So this spin chain can be interpreted better in terms of integrable field theory, sigma model. And the long-range interaction can be taken into account as virtual particles propagating. So this object is dual to some. So you imagine now this is some space sigma, one-dimensional space. And you can view the evolution of this object as some, let's say, string propagating in some two-dimensional, one plus one-dimensional space-time. So you have sigma here, and you have the time here. So the elementary excitation of these integrable field theories are like some excitations propagating in time in this direction. And in fact, the long-range interaction of the spin chain can be also viewed as particles propagating in the space direction. So you can exchange sigma with time, and instead of propagating physical particles like this, you propagate virtual particles in the what we call mirror channel. So this virtual particles are important in order to describe operators which are which have a small number of constituents. If you have a large number of constituents here, these states will be dual to semi-classical strings, and the size of the system will not be very important. But if you consider operators which have a small number of constituents, for example, Konishi operator, which has two or four constituents, depending on the particular representative you are looking at. So for the small number of constituents, the finite size effects will be important, and they can be described in terms of this propagating virtual particles. So if you just look at a single spin chain, the problem of computing the energies of the single spin chains is equivalent to computing the conformal dimensions of these operators, gauge invariant operators. And this problem was understood from the point of view of integrability by formulating the problem in terms of thermodynamic beta ansatz equations. And then simplified to get something which is called quantum spectral curve. And this method, this formulation allows in principle to get the anomalous dimension, the conformal dimension for any operator at any coupling constant, provided that you can solve, explicitly solve these equations known as a quantum spectral curve. So now the the description of individual operators can be given in terms of some collection of rapidities. So this particular state is associated to some collection of rapidities, which are roughly collection of momenta of these individual particles propagating. So these are just excitations of the 1+1 dimensional integrable field theory. And well, the quantum spectral curve in fact is a collection of eight functions called Baxter functions. Of a spectral parameter, and the collection of these rapidities, in fact, can be seen as zeros of this of the Baxter functions. And in the limit, when the length, the number of constituents here is what I will call the length of the operator. So if the length goes to infinity, these Baxter functions will give rise to some collection of functions, which in fact they will become a different determination of a curve with eight sheets, and each of the value of these eight sheets I will denote it p of u. So this is called quasi-momentum. And it's essentially what these functions become when the number of these rapidities becomes very large. And the zeros of the Baxter function may condense to some cuts, which will relate different sheets of this multiple sheeted curve. So these are a kind of dynamical cuts, and in fact, there is another type of cut which is of kinematical nature, and it is situated between u equals -2g and U equals 2G. So the structure of the structure of this sheet can be understood in terms of some variable which is double valued. So it's related to the rapidity U by this Zhukovsky relation. So you see that when U equals minus plus or minus 2G, X is equal to plus or minus 1. So, okay, that's about the description of a single operator. So now the question is what will be the structure of what happens if you want to compute the 3-point function. So if you want to compute the 3-point function, you want to take three spin chains with a collection of rapidities U1, U2, U3. And at weak coupling, you can start to do just Gaussian contractions between the different components of the of the operators. At higher spin, at higher loop order, this definition is a bit unclear because you have to introduce vertex interactions and so on. So, and at strong coupling, the image is just the three strings interacting with each other. So, the object you want to consider is some object which roughly, well, if the operators have Lorentz spin situation, the situation will be a little bit more complicated, but in general the by conformal invariance, the structure of the 3-point function will be given by the space-time dependence is given by this factor, and then all the dependence on the coupling is given by this structure constant part. So delta ij is equal to delta I plus delta j minus delta k, where ijk is a permutation of 1, 2, 3, where 1, 2, 3 are the indices of this operator. And the definition of the structure constant is such that is fixed by the normalization of the 2-point function. Such that the coefficient in front of the 2-point function is 1. So this is the object that you can compute by computing the spectrum of the integrable Hamiltonian. And then what is left is to compute this structure constant. So when G is small, one can use the technology from spin chains and define this structure constant as overlaps of states of spin chains. So this kind of strategy was proposed by Escobedo, Gromov, Sever, and Vieira in 2010. On the other hand, if you have large G, you can use string methods, and the fact that the string theory is described by a stigma model, which is classical in this limit. So you can use it, methods from classical integrability. And well, this strategy was taken by Romuald Janik and collaborators around 2010-2011. And then in a series of papers by Kazama, Komatsu, and then Nishimura between 2011-2016. And they were able to get the semi-classical limit of the of this structure constant here. So okay, I will come to that expression a little bit later. But now I would like to explain maybe what can one do when G is finite. So for arbitrary value of the coupling constant, Basso, Komatsu, and Vieira proposed in 2015 expression of the generic three-point function by decomposing this object here, cutting it into two hexagons. So you imagine the world sheet of these three strings, joining strings. S being obtained by sewing together two hexagons. So a hexagon is a kind of can be seen as a surface with some curvature defect in the center, because you have some three. These angles here have to be of 90 degrees. Because this is like a time slice, this is a space slice, so the angle between time slice and space slice has to be 90 degrees. So this means that there should be some curvature defect, some curvature excess somewhere. So that in the middle of the hexagon, there should be a curvature excess of pi. So the idea of Basso, Komatsu, and Vieira was to decompose this three-point function in terms of this contribution of two hexagons. So each of the incoming states has some excitations represented now by these dots. So some when you cut the hexagon, some of the dots can go on one side of the, on one hexagon or the other. So here I will have in front two, and in the back five, probably five excitations. Here I have one and three, and here I have just three. So the sum will be now between the, all the ways to expand split this ensemble of rapidities into ensemble for each operator. So the sum here will be over all the partitions of the rapidities, ensembles of rapidities into different ensembles. So okay, I will write this now like alpha I. So there is some contribution coming from individual hexagons. And some gluing factors which contain, which depend on the length. I mean, on some distribution of the rapidities. So this is the part which depends of what you have on the external. On the external links, and then there is some contribution from the mirror articles that I will come to it later. So that's roughly the expression of the. Which was proposed by Basso Comati and Vieira. These objects here are, there is an explicit ansatz for them. And in order to be able to check with explicit examples, you have to compare with what you get at weak coupling, what you get at strong coupling. So my purpose is to explain how to get from this formula, how to get the how to compare with what you get from the strong coupling limit. So the structure of the answer at strong coupling is the following. So the logarithm of this the structure constant can be written in terms of some structures that I will denote abstractly by star, and then there is some integral, contour integral over around some contour. And then the logarithm of exponential of I P star of Z. So now P star can be there are several contributions that you can get. So there are AI plus VJ minus PK of Z. Well, these P's are now essentially this quasi-momenta here for any of the operators I from 1 to 3. So this is one of the structures that you can get. The other structure is just 2 pi I. So here I, j, k is equal to 1, 2, 3. You have the three quasi-momenta. Or there is another contribution, which is P1 plus P2 plus P3 of Z. Oh, the question and this contours gamma go around some of these cuts here. So depending on the combination you have here, some of the gamma contours will go around this dynamical cuts, and some will go around this kinematical cut here. Okay, so the question that we wanted to address was how to pass from this multiple sum here to this semi-classical expression. So now I have to explain you what these objects here are explicitly. So I will consider the case when O1 of X is a non-BPS with just excitations just in one in a rank one subsector of PSU22/4. For example, SU2 or SL2. So this will be something like operators of type phi 1 plus phi 2 and phi 2, 3 plus phi 4. And this one will be a covariant derivative at power k applied to phi 1 plus I phi 2. So in this case, these hexagon expressions are rather simple. The sum here will reduce to a single sum over the rapidities of a single non-BPS operator. So this will be given by this sum of some phase factor, which is given by 1, 3. So it's given by the transition between this hexagons, and this transition factor is given by essentially the length of this segment here. So this is L13. So L, this would be L12, and L23 is the third one. So Lij is again something like this, the length of I plus length of operator J minus length of operator K. So this is the W factor that I have written in on the other blackboard. And then you have some the contribution of the well, there is a global factor that I will ignore for the time being, because it's just a multiplicative factor. So there is a there is a product inside the sum. So H of now I will use the notation that if I have a function of two variables with the indices, so this will be, if I have two, a function which depends on two sets, this is defined as the function of the products of all the the elements in the first set combined with any element in the other set. And this by local factor is given by some complicated function, but which can be separated into some some dependence. This is some symmetric combination of a symmetric function of U and V, and this is some anti-symmetric function which is related to the scattering phase of the elementary excitation. So this is anti-symmetric. Oh, the explicit expression of these objects is not very important for the moment. The most important part is given by this dependence. So the easiest way to compute this evaluate this sum is to write this sum as an integral. So this can be written as the sum over partition can be in fact written as a sum of multiple integrals. There is some measure and then this there is this factor exponential minus I p of I L13. Then there is this H factor which contains Zi and then the set Ui, and then there is some product of H so some measure of some measure of integration which couples the different integrals. So how to understand how to get this sum from this integral. So the integral here is over contours which encircle let's say gamma. Encircles the support of the this the rapidities, the external rapidities. Oh, as you see here, this factor here contains poles every time that z goes close to some rapidity. So by evaluating this multiple integral by residues, you can get back this this sum. So now this is almost. If you forget about this measure which couples the different integrals, this looks almost like an expansion of an exponential of this uncoupled integrals. But of course, this the result is not just the exponential of the individual integrals, because there is some contribution coming from this measure. And this measure, as you can see from this expression here, it's some S square of product over E less than J, S of ZI ZJ. And then ZI minus ZJ square over Z I minus ZJ square plus 1. So now what I would like to make use of the fact that states which are dual to semi-classical string for which this formula can be evaluated have values where U is large of the order of U are of the order of the size of the operator, which is non-BPS. So I will take a parameter which is 1 over L, and I want to rescale everything by the size of the rapidities. So I will just get here an epsilon square, and here I will get an epsilon to the power n. If you count the power, if you do the power counting of the different elements. So this symmetric part here is equal to 1 for the cases we are interested in, so we can neglect it safely. But this part here gives a non-trivial contribution. Superficially, it looks like it's equal to 1 if epsilon is small, but in fact, you see that there are poles which this is like 1 plus 1 minus epsilon times delta of zi minus zj when epsilon is small. So if you count the contributions of all the terms, you'll see that you'll get some reduction of the number of integrals together with this power of epsilon, which will kill some of these powers here. So the contribution from this delta here will combine with the other terms in the integral. So you really have to be careful about taking into account this this object. Also, an interesting remark is that this factor here is a Cauchy determinant. So it's the Cauchy determinant of Zi minus Zj plus epsilon, I epsilon. And this means that all the sum here can be written as a Fredholm determinant. So if you want to approximate to take the limit when epsilon goes to zero of this object, you have to compute some Fredholm determinant. So this is something that was discussed by Bettelheim and Kostov in 2014, I think. So if you don't like to use Fredholm determinants, you just can do manipulations of contour integrals, and take into account the poles which are coming from the when initially the different integrals are on the same contour. So what you can do is to move the contours away from each other, and in the process of moving the contours away, you will pick the poles from this from this measure of integration. So if you do the computation carefully, you will get that this contour integral, the structure constant will be given by again this sum over n, 1 over n factorial, and then there is some coefficient which so as I said, in the process of moving the contours of integration away, you will pick poles and you reduce the number of integrals, but this is at the expense of getting some when you catch one of the poles of this integrals when Zi is equal to Zj plus I epsilon, you'll get here combinations which looks like this. So this is like looks like a bound state of the individual constituents. So you can do this process iteratively, and then you'll get some collection of cluster of these bound states. So you at the end you have to count how many clusters you got. So the result is that starting with n-fold integral, you get a number of clusters of length q1 to qk, such that q1 plus q2 plus qk is equal to n. And then an integral, so like this I will call this kind of contribution f2 of zi. So I will get here integral of contour gamma contour gamma, let's say, and then you have dz1 to dzk. You are left with just k integrals, and then you get this fq product j equal 1 to k of ZK. And then the measure here becomes some measure coupling different clusters of different lengths, QI, QJ. And when epsilon, well, when in the semi-classical limit, this FQ of Z becomes F to the power Q of Z, as you can see here. If the shift becomes very small, you just get the power, second power of F, and delta QI QJ goes to 1. So in this case, the what you get from G of G square, it's not very important. So what you get from here is just exponential of there will be a so I just replace the quantities by their limiting value, and then you get just the product of non-coupled integrals. And if you take into account the value of this combinatorial coefficient, you just get the exponentiation of sum over n equals 0 to infinity f to the power n integral over dz f to the power n of z over n square. And this is just exponential of integral of the logarithm of f dz. So if you look at the definition of f, you will get that this combination here just exponentiates, just reduces to this combination of quasi-momenta. So this is how you get part of this answer here. So I'm much slower than I expected. So this was just how you get the one part of the contribution of the one part of the contribution of the quasi-momenta. I wanted now to discuss the contribution of the mirror particles. And this is very similar, in fact, this is very similar to the contribution of the physical particles. So the proposal by Basso, Comazzo, and De Viera was to gives also an expression for the contribution of the mirror particles. And the expression of the mirror contribution is very similar to the integral representation that I have given above. So the only difference is that now that mirror particles are come also as bound states with arbitrary length. So now And the, in addition to the contribution which is given above, there is some contribution from the interaction of the bound states with the physical particles. And the integrals are not on the same domain of integration. Now the integrals so they are over a different domain. So now I have to explain what is the domain of integration. So you have this branch cuts with the kinematical cut between minus 2g and 2g. And in fact, there are two branch cuts appearing in the game, because you have x plus, you have two types of branch cuts. Because the Zhukovsky variable that appears there, it appears for the variable shifted with plus or minus I over 2. So the mirror variables have to have so you have to go to the next cut for the variable x plus, and you have to stay on the same sheet for the variable x minus. So you imagine that you have the two branch cuts here. This is for x plus of u, and this is for x minus of u. So the physical variable, physical domain is here, and this is the mirror, the domain of integration for the mirror particles. So you have to, the bottom line is that you have to change the integration contour when you go from the physical particles to mirror particles. Otherwise, the expression are very similar. So you are doing the same, playing the same game again with this integrals. You have to now you are combining bound state in bigger bound state. So there is a very nice simplification for the result. So I don't have enough time to explain the details, but the thing is that if you are computing so now I'm discussing a contribution which amounts to considering mirror particles which go on a single on a single side of the of the hexagon. So if you are doing this game again, you are obtaining a similar expression here. So one correspond. So the physical contribution correspond to gamma around the support of this U distribution of the rapidities. And if you are computing the mirror contribution, you are getting another contour gamma, which corresponds to the interval 2g or from minus 2g to 2g, which will be this contour here. So the two contributions are very similar. So the question, how to obtain the other two contributions, is more complicated. I mean, the answer to this question is more more complicated, so I will just explain what's the rough idea. So the question is what happens when you have mirror particles which go around the two sides of the hexagons. And in the original proposal for the three-point function, there was a kind of singularity in the proposal when you have two mirror particles which go, let's say, with rapidity z left and z right, and the measure of integration. So the measure of integration comes with the factor h of z l z right times h of z right z left, and this has a double pole. So the question how to regularize this pole was the subject of a recent paper by Basso Consalves and Komatsu, a very beautiful paper showing that this divergence here, in fact, comes from the fact that one consider that the length of this, the insertion of this, the operators was very far away at infinity. So if you consider this as a kind of world sheet for a spin chain, the spin chains are, well, the states are inserted far away at infinity. But in fact, you have to introduce a regulator in the sense that a sigma has to stop at a finite distance, sigma equal to r. So considering this this divergence, in fact, is compensated by the renormalization of the wave function, which enters into the two-point function. So when you write the two-point function like this, the correction from the mirror particles comes as a normalization here, like epsilon to r plus correction times correction. So the fact that you get a divergence from this contribution is related to the renormalization of the wave function. So the part that I will not present here is about how to resum this divergent contribution. Basso Consalves and Vieira consider, Basso Consalves and Komatsu consider just the contribution of a pair of magnons. But you can use essentially the same methods that I have shown here to resum the contribution, the divergent contribution, and then the next step is to compute the finite part when you subtract the divergence, and the finite part should give this this contribution here, and finally this part, the last contribution is even more difficult to obtain. So for this part here, I I think one should work harder to get it. So, okay, I'm sorry for being going over time. Thank you for your attention. Well, it would be interesting to understand how to get this divergent part well, in fact, the computation of the divergent part comes at any coupling. It's true at any coupling. So I think the most interesting thing is to understand for higher point correlation function how this divergence come about, and how to relate the result of resumming of these mirror particles to computation of the loop integrals. Recently, Shota and Thiago Fleury made a proposal to compute higher point functions by decomposing the world sheet in hexagons, very much like the three-point function is split into two hexagons. And of course, when you have more than three-point functions, there will be a dependence on the cross ratios of the points of insertion of the operators, and the results should be related to loop integrals. So, if you want to compute the correlation functions from perturbation theory in gauge theory, you'll get some complicated integrals that you want to evaluate, and these integrals can be alternatively written in terms of these sums over excitations of integrable one plus one dimensional theory. So I think the most interesting application of these methods will be how to understand how to compute loop integrals by TBA-like methods. Yes. So, if you look at amplitudes or Wilson loops, you will get something like, I mean, instead of having three closed string which are joined together, you will have some open strings. So, essentially, the methods should be very similar, except that, of course, you have to, if you consider Wilson loops or things like this, you have to consider open spin chains with some integrable or non-integrable boundary conditions. So it's a bit more complicated, but it's essentially the same story.
Thank you.